Mr. Dury.
May it please the court, this is a hybrid case in which a union member seeks to establish that the union breached its duty of fair representation by failing to enforce an arbitration award granting his grievance, and secondly, to confirm the arbitration award against the employer. The union breaches its duty of fair representation if it engages in arbitrary conduct, bad faith, or discriminatory conduct. In this case, the arbitration award was not ambiguous. It clearly provided that the grievance was granted and that every employee who was a member of the union at the Decatur plant on January 11, 2008, when Sunbelt announced it was closing that store, was entitled to a lateral transfer to Springfield under the collective bargaining agreement. Now, the collective bargaining agreement provided if there's a closure at Decatur and opening of another store within the union's jurisdiction, that there would have to be a lateral transfer. That was negotiated when the union members knew that Sunbelt was planning on closing Decatur. The issue before the arbitrator, however, was that Decatur closed. The announcement was January 11, 2008, but it actually closed on February 29, 2008. Springfield didn't open until July 1, 2008. In my brief, I said August 1, but I did see the affidavit of Rick Moss of Sunbelt. It's actually July 1. So the issue was, well, does Article 19 apply because they didn't open Springfield until several months after they closed Decatur? The arbitrator interpreted the CBA to determine, yes, that was the intent of the parties. That was his interpretation. And the language he used, there's nothing ambiguous about the language. So the arbitrator interpreted the award, and the brief and a couple of recent letters under 28E have cited the original U.S. Supreme Court case was Paper Workers Union versus MISCO, I think in 1983, and then since then this court has repeatedly ruled that the review of an arbitration award is limited in scope. In fact, Judge Easterbrook just decided a case that I cited.
Counsel, it's completely unimportant who writes the decisions of this court. They speak for the court.
The court just issued a decision in which it repeated what was stated over and over again. It doesn't matter if the arbitrator erred.
Of course, we're not here on a motion to enforce the award. The right to enforce the award belongs to the union. And, of course, the holder of an arbitration award, like the holder of a judgment of a district court, can choose to settle or compromise in order to avoid an appeal. So what we need to hear from you is why it violated the duty of fair representation for the union to strike this particular compromise.
There were several arguable compromises. The November 7 letters that were exchanged, in which the union proposed and Sunbelt agreed to provide a lateral transfer to the three remaining employees at issue, including Mr. Hardwick, but without back pay. That was never disclosed to the plaintiff. And that's at least a factual dispute, but if the court will look at all of the letters from the union through Mr. O'Hara, its attorney, starting with this December 1 letter, it clearly indicates that Mr. Hardwick had not been told about that agreement, because the letters say Sunbelt did not breach the award by failing to offer a lateral transfer, when allegedly, according to Mr. Zahn, the union business agent, on November 15, 2008, they had a meeting with Mr. Hardwick and Mr. O'Hara was present, and supposedly Eddie was told orally that Sunbelt had agreed to a lateral transfer but without back pay. But the letters are all contrary to that. In fact, could not have been written if that had been disclosed to Eddie, and it appears on appeal that that argument is even abandoned. So the arbitration award to be confirmed under the Federal Arbitration Act, 9 U.S.C. 1 et sec, Section 9.
Look, counsel, I've already said that this is not a motion to confirm the award. We're trying to figure out whether the union's settlement violated the duty of fair representation.
Yes, Your Honor. And the, well, first of all, Mr. Hardwick wasn't told about it.
I don't see why that matters. The union, under federal labor law, the union is the exclusive bargaining representative. It doesn't have to negotiate with workers. The union negotiates directly with the employer, not with its members. Now, that's the structure of federal labor law. So if your only complaint is that there was very little bargaining between the union and the plaintiff, it doesn't, so far as I can tell, have anything to do with the union's duties under federal labor law.
It is arbitrary to reach an agreement with Sunbelt that Eddie Hardwick would be entitled to a lateral transfer without back pay. And Sunbelt says, when will he be reporting to duty? And the union doesn't tell Eddie Hardwick there's an agreement in place for him to report to duty, but in fact says, you're not covered by the arbitration award, which was untrue, which was false. And they told him that repeatedly. That is arbitrary. That is in bad faith. And it's also discriminatory because at the time of the November 7 agreement, there were three employees that were covered by those letters, Greg Brehm, Joe Daniel, and Eddie Hardwick. And the only one who had lost wages was Eddie Hardwick. Joe Daniel had been employed at the Springfield locations.
What lost wages did he have? He resigned.
The arbitration award says that the lost wages would be from the failure to grant the transfer to Springfield. The arbitration award said that he was entitled to a lateral transfer to Springfield, and if it was not offered pursuant to the arbitration award, the back wages would be because of the failure to offer it to him.
When would they have run from, the date of his resignation or from the date?
It was agreed by the parties, this is in the record, that the union was claiming lost wages from the date Springfield opened, which would be July 1, not August 1. Eddie had about $17,000, $16,000 in lost wages as of November 7. Joe Daniel had been employed at Springfield since June 24. This is in the October 20 letter. From Mr. O'Hara that's in the appendix. And Greg Brehm had been employed at Champaign, which is not within 965's territory, but another Sunbelt store. The arbitration award provides that about four employees, including Mr. Brehm, were permitted to transfer to Champaign temporarily and reserve their claim for a later transfer to Springfield. So he had been working at Champaign the entire time. The only one with lost wages was Eddie Hardwick. But there's no way that he could take a position on the agreement the union reached without being told about it. The only way he found out about it was during discovery a year later, after the lost wages had increased substantially because of the failure to provide the lateral transfer to him. So by any definition, and secondly, for the union to enforce the arbitration award, all they had to do is either threaten to do it or actually file a motion with the court to enforce the arbitration award. There were no grounds for not enforcing it. The argument that it conflicts with the collective bargaining agreement is not a ground for vacating it. Sunbelt did not file a motion to vacate it. They had 3 months to do that, which expired on December 9. So after December 9, if the union had simply filed a motion with the court under Section 9 of the Federal Arbitration Act, that provides that the court must grant it unless there's grounds for vacating it, and it would have been too late to file an application to vacate it, number one. And number two, the only arguable ground for vacating that has been presented is that the arbitration award conflicted with the collective bargaining agreement, and that's a decision for the arbitrator who interpreted the collective bargaining agreement that a lateral transfer is required under Article 19 of the CBA, and that ends that question. So there's nothing really to negotiate. The district court said, well, Sunbelt had a right of appeal. By that, I believe the right of appeal would have been to file an application to vacate the award under Section 10 and 12 of the Federal Arbitration Act, which had to be filed within 90 days and had to raise some grounds. The only arguable ground that I can see would be that the arbitrator exceeded his authority because his decision conflicts with the collective bargaining agreement. And that takes us back to the point that I've made previously, that once the arbitrator decided that was his interpretation of the collective bargaining agreement, that ended the question. The argument advanced by the union and Sunbelt for not enforcing the arbitration award initially was that after January 11, 2008, when the union announced it was closing Decatur, but before February 29, when they actually closed Decatur, Mr. Hardwick resigned. The arbitrator knew that. He discussed it in his award. As a matter of fact, Mr. Hardwick testified to essentially everything that was in the January 25 resignation letter in his testimony, which is in the record. His testimony is in the record. That after he was denied a transfer to Springfield, he said, well, what about Champaign? Because some others were being transferred to Champaign. That was denied. So his option was to stay there until February 29, at which time he would have no employment but to proceed with the arbitration, or resign. He resigned before February 29, but after January 11, when the arbitrator held that anybody working there on January 11 is entitled to a lateral transfer. That's what the arbitration award provides. Then, with the union and Sunbelt both having knowledge of Eddie's resignation letters and the fact of his resignation, the union proceeds to arbitrate his grievance. In fact, he's one of their key witnesses. Having proceeded to arbitrate his grievance, they have an obligation to him to arbitrate it in good faith, to exercise their duty of fair representation, and to implement it. There was no reason not to implement it as it was. Lateral transfer with back pay. There's no legitimate argument not to implement it. But even if the union could make an agreement, we'll waive the back pay for Eddie, even though the other two fellows involved don't have any back pay, even if it could do that, it has to inform Eddie of that instead of telling him he's not entitled to the benefits of the arbitration award and having the executive board vote he's not entitled to the benefits of the arbitration award. Just submitting it to the executive board is a question of bad faith. It's not the executive board's decision whether he's covered by the arbitration award or not. I see my initial time is up, and I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Hill.
Your Honor, would it be possible for the union to start the argument?
Certainly. Mr. O'Hara.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. You know, I'd like to start out, first of all, dispelling the notion that the district court somehow relitigated the issues before the arbitrator. Mr. Hardwick has presented a lot of argument to the effect that the court somehow usurped the role of the arbitrator in that respect and somehow made decisions that the arbitrator had the authority to make. The fact of the matter is that the district court simply indicated that there were doubts as to the validity and viability of that arbitration award and didn't make a decision either way. It did indicate that it was inclined to agree that there were substantial problems as to the applicability of that arbitration award to Mr. Hardwick. But it didn't make that decision. It just simply said there's a reasonable doubt. And that's the rationale, the reasonableness upon which the notion of arbitrariness is weighed in a 301 case, is that the court found that the union was reasonable in its notion that we may have a problem here and we don't want an appeal by the employer Sunbelt. We don't want them to try to get back to the arbitrator for clarification because there well may be a problem, not only for Mr. Hardwick, but for the validity of the entire arbitration award affecting other people, other claimants. That dovetails, I think, also in the notion of the difficulty I think Mr. Hardwick has with regard to indicating that the union is arbitrary or acting arbitrarily in these instances when we look at the district court's decision. Now, the district court wasn't under the same time constraints as the union, certainly didn't have the same labor management exigencies to consider, but it still made the determination that the conduct and the rationale of the union was reasonable. And the union had a less advantageous perspective because of those time constraints and the concerns of labor management relations. And therefore, when Mr. Hardwick says the union was acting arbitrarily, necessarily he's going to have to say that the district court, having the cold record and the time to be able to look at all these circumstances, was likewise acting in an arbitrary manner. I think the record shows in spades, through the very detailed and very well-reasoned decision by the court, that the union did not act in an unreasonable manner, did not act in a discriminatory manner, nor in any bad faith manner.
Isn't there a question of fact about whether the settlement offer was conveyed?
No, because the court assumed that the settlement offer wasn't, that the union did not inform Mr. Hardwick of that settlement offer. It assumed that fact in his favor and still found that it was immaterial given the fact that it belonged, the grievance and the arbitration award essentially belonged to the union, and they had reasons why, for the good of the group, not for discriminatory purposes, not for bad faith purposes, not for irrational purposes. They had a reason why they wanted to settle it the way they did, particularly in light of the reluctance of Sunbelt to rehire Mr. Hardwick. I'll defer to Ms. Hill for the rest of the argument. Thank you.
Ms. Hill.
Good morning. First of all, I'm going to quote from the union business manager, Michael Zahn, who said that labor relations are hard enough without somebody being there who is trying not to be a team player and actually working against the team. And that is what Mr. Hardwick did from the get-go in this matter. Initially, just to contradict a couple of things mentioned by Mr. DeRee, is that the Champaign location is covered by the 965. Also, with respect to Mr. Daniel, he did have some lost wages. However, there was an argument as to how he incurred those lost wages, but we agree with what the court indicated earlier, that there is a negotiation between the company and the union once an award is has been issued. With respect to Sunbelt filing a claim in court to vacate the arbitration award, Sunbelt was ready to do so. And after we believe that we had some sort of agreement with the union as to how to bring back the three individuals, and in particular Mr. Hardwick, we kept constant communication open with the union trying to determine what was going on. After the 90 days ran, we were still prepared to file a claim because we were still under the impression that there had been some sort of agreement and that perhaps the court would toll the 90 days based on what information we had. However, we believe that the union did not show any action that could be considered arbitrary, discriminatory, or in bad faith. In fact, with respect to discriminatory, Mr. Hardwick was demanding back pay, whereas the other two individuals, and arguably Mr. Daniel could get some back pay, he never included them in his complaint, or the first time there was ever any kind of concern about those individuals was with respect to the reply brief before this court. Arguably, Mr. Hardwick rejected the company's offer for reinstatement without back pay It is a letter that he sent to the union. It's part of the record. It's on page 682 of the record. We believe that the district court's decision to grant summary judgment filed by the union and a separate one filed by Sunbelt should be granted and that the should be affirmed, and that the denial of summary judgment for Mr. Hardwick should also be affirmed. Any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Hill. Anything further, Mr. DeRee?
Yes, Your Honor.
On November 7, the union proposed a settlement of a lateral transfer without back pay for three employees, Mr. Hardwick and Mr. Brem and Mr. Daniel. On the same day, these were fax letters, the Sunbelt responded, "We accept your proposal." And it says, "With respect to Mr. Hardwick, he will be transferred to the shop foreman position at the Springfield Profit Center. Let me know when he'll be reporting." It's very much a disputed fact that he was ever told about that. In fact, 2 weeks later, Mr. Michael O'Hara sent his initial letter of December 1, which is at page A31 of the appendix, and he says, "Therefore, I've advised the local union, it is my belief that Sunbelt's refusal to proffer you a lateral transfer to Springfield is not a breach of the ZIP arbitration award." They just reached an agreement that he would be transferred to Springfield, and he's saying they didn't breach the award by not offering you a lateral transfer. So that's very much a disputed fact. And by December 9, they couldn't even have filed an application to vacate the award if a motion to confirm had been filed with the court. Section 9 of the Federal Arbitration Act says it must be confirmed into a judgment. Then this is cited, and it's in the record, that the union never responded to Sunbelt's November 7 letter, "When will Mr. Hardwick be reporting for duty?" either orally or in writing. On January 7, 2009, I wrote to Sunbelt. This is in the record. This is in the appendix as well. And I said, "Mr. Hardwick was not offered a lateral transfer as required by the arbitration award." I sent that to Sunbelt. I sent a copy of that letter to the union with a different cover letter. So they both had that statement in front of them. Neither one responded, "Oh, he was offered, he was told about the agreement that he could have a lateral transfer." Neither one. All of Mr. O'Hara's letters state that starting with December 1, state that Mr. Hardwick is not entitled to a lateral. Thank you, Your Honor.
The case will be taken under advisement.